This episode of Anabaptist Perspectives is sponsored by Sattler College.
I'm here with Clayton Shank. We're in New York, Pennsylvania, and you haven't always lived in the city. You moved here, and you're now a school administrator in an inner city context. Can you just give us a little bit of background, what that was like when you made that move to the city?
Well, what's interesting is that my first church experience was in the city of Lancaster. Mm-hmm. So my parents were missionaries to Lancaster City, Laurel Street. And so my very first remembrances of church, summer Bible school, prayer meetings, was all city missions. At about the age of 10, 12, somewhere there, mm-hmm. there was a dispute at church and my parents were asked to leave. And so we went back out to the country. That was a very, very hard adjustment for me to have to go to a country church instead of a city church. And it's hard for anybody, right? Any child, at least, mm-hmm. to have to adjust to what you're used to. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in the country. Sort of the suburbs of Lancaster City. It's been in my bones, right? It's been in, mm-hmm. and I think that's an important thing for parents to think about, is what do they want their children to appreciate, and what you give them at a young age is mm-hmm. many times, the Bible says, train up a child the way he should go, and he's only won't depart from it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a number of my siblings who are also in the cities, and in different cities, mm-hmm. And doing city missions. And so that's a critical part. So for me, we visited for a while. We lived in Lancaster the first year and a half of our marriage and traveled to York. But then I saw young people who really wanted to do what was right, but they had to pay to call their pastor. They had to, that was before cell phones, when you could just call people,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so I actually got an 800 number so that they could call me over in Lancaster without them costing anything. But then I said, you know what? If I can't live in a city and be faithful to God, how can I expect them to live in the city and be faithful to God? And so moving in was sort of an act of a demonstration that you can be faithful living in the city and in the midst of all the crime and all the whatever people think that the city is. Mm-hmm. You can be faithful, and I want to show that to the youth so that they could also do that. So it was a missionary venture to move in.
So with that move into the city, what are some prejudices or misconceptions, things that you had to overcome, and then maybe impressions other people had of what the city is like?
Well, prejudice is a very, very real thing. And whether we like it or not, whether we think it, we have it or not, almost everybody is prejudiced about something, right? I remember as a little boy, my dad was drilling, and I don't know what drill he was using or what job he was doing, but I just remember him saying, "This is pretty good for a craftsman." Now, that prejudice against Sears products, I caught that. I was like, oh, okay, well, what is this, right? And so the little comments we make along the way are the same way. And so I'll go to a church and I'll say, how many of you hope that you never have to live in the city? How many of you ever, raise your hand, right? And you get lots of, especially out in the country, I don't want to live in the city. I said, well, I'm going to pray for you, because in Revelation it says all of God's people are going to live in a holy city. We have these conceptions of people. Mm-hmm. I was in the hay mow helping my brother-in-law load hay. I was, that back in the days when they had the little hays, instead of the big bales. And one of the helpers there, he said, everybody who lives in the city is lazy and crazy. I said, everybody? Yep, absolutely. Everybody lives in the city lazy and crazy. I said, really? I wanted to help him dig his hole a little deeper,
Yeah.
Ask him a couple questions. And my nephew's like, psst, he lives in the city. Oh. Almost everybody who lives in the city is lazy and crazy. I think we have a perception like that. And most of us grow up, most of the people who don't live in the city have this concept that crime is really bad in the city. And and there's a prejudice against just the concept that you would even live in the city. Mm. Well, the Bible talks about over 1,000 verses about cities. Wow. City or cities. And for most of humans' existence, since creation, you lived in a city for safety, and you went out in the country to do your farming, right? Mm-hmm. You didn't have a farm out there. That's a concept of America. Mm-hmm. When you left Europe, people came over here, and there was woods. And so you chopped down a tree, you built a house, you cleared some more trees, and you had a farm. And you had your own little individual farm. Well, that whole concept is only in the last 250 years. because the European model, the African model, it's a cluster of homes, and you put up a fence around that to protect you from the animals at night or from the other enemies, right? And so the whole concept for thousands of years was you live in the city. It's safer in the city. Now we come and we say, no, no, it's safer out in the country. It's a total reversal of what you have to do. Now, I ask people, when I teach at SMBI, for instance, the urban missions class, I'll say, true or false, most people living in the city are blacks or Hispanics. And people, yeah, true. No, that's false. Mm-hmm. Most people living in the cities are white. And there are some cities. You know, you can find Atlanta, Georgia, and St. Louis, and New Orleans. You know, but for the most part, here in America, the whites are the majority of people in the city. I'll say, okay, so most people who are on welfare are blacks, true or false? Yeah, that's right. So that's false. Most people on welfare are whites. Matter of fact, there's more farmers on welfare than there are whites or city people.
Whoa, interesting.
Now that's a controversial one, right? I'm going to tell you that. Yeah. Because what's farm subsidies? Mm-hmm. You know, I'll pay you to not plant any crops this year, right? That's welfare. Mm-hmm. And so I'll give you, if you dump this much milk, I'll pay you to plant this crop. And that. Mm-hmm. So that's a form of welfare. It's a form of government subsidy, but we don't look at it that way. So then when you ask about crime, how many believe that most people who commit crimes are living in the city? Yeah, that's right. Well, death, for instance, about 15,000 murders per year. That's awful, right? But what about how many deaths happen in business because of violation of OSHA? Is that also a murder? Well, that is way more. There's more deaths per year from business accidents than there are from actual gun shootings in the city. And so then you look about theft, right? The cities are awful. You know, people stealing stuff, and it amounts about $5 billion a year.
Wow.
Well, when you think about embezzlement, right? That's about $20 billion a year. $20 billion a year, that's the upper echelon. That's the higher guys. That's the white-collar crime. Mm-hmm. And most people don't report white-collar crime. There's lots of embezzlement for instance, a bank. I don't know what bank you go to, but let's just say you read in the bank that the vice president of finances embezzled $10 million from the bank. Mm-hmm. That's a terrible light for your bank, right? Mm-hmm. That means my bank isn't safe. If that guy could embezzle $10 million, I better get a different bank. So they won't report that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But universally, year after year after year, there's more embezzlement than there is actual theft. And so we have these prejudices that it's not safe there. It's safe where I'm at. But per capita, there's more crime actually in some of the other smaller towns than there is actually in the big city per person. Right? And so you just have to look and research and to recognize and also to put your confidence in God.
There's a lot of Christian authors today or people of influence that are saying things like, you know, that the church needs to be much more intentional about moving into the cities. I'm curious, would you share that? And if so, like, what kind of model would you suggest for our churches, particularly the Anabaptists, to be involved in those?
This episode is sponsored by Sattler College. The modern higher education system is broken. Modern education is hostile to faith, too expensive, and academically weak. We need nothing short of a revolution. Sattler College was founded upon the biblical vision of Christian discipleship that addresses the mind, soul, and heart. Our mission is to provide an education that instructs the mind, discipleship that shapes the soul, and inspiration that inflames the heart. Our goal is to enable graduates to heartily say, "For God has not given us the spirit of timidity, but of power, love, and a sound mind."
There's a lot of Christian authors today or people of influence that are saying things like, you know, that the church needs to be much more intentional about moving into the cities. I'm curious, would you share that? And if so, like, what kind of model would you suggest for our churches, particularly the Anabaptists, to be involved in those ways?
First of all, I want to confess that I have been so city, go, a cheerleader for city missions that I have sometimes wounded other people who are not involved. And there's people who have felt that I come across like, "You're not quite as spiritual if you're not in the city." I mean, the spiritual ones are in the city. And I don't want to do that. The reason I would encourage city missions is that's where the people are. And so mm-hmm. if you have, let's say, I don't know what the statistic is, we'll just make something up, right? Mm-hmm. 1 in 1,000 people is going to come to Christ. Well, if you're in a town of 6,000 people, you have 6 people that are going to come to Christ. If you're in a city with 200,000 people, that means you're going to have 200 people come to Christ, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you want to build church, and you know, you get where people are and get where the needs are, you can be more effective. And so I would really encourage us to think about that. Now, another way of looking at that is in the founding of this country, all up and down the East Coast, there was the, what do you call, the high church, the people who had to be educated to be pastors. Well, the Methodists and the Baptists, they had the circuit-riding preachers, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, we're heading west. The high church didn't have enough educated pastors to go along out west. Mm-hmm. But the Southern Baptists, which was a very, very small group at that time, and the United Methodists, very, very small group, they went out west with the, and so one pastor might go circuit for 12, 15, 20 churches, 20 different communities. They're the ones who are the biggest today. They're the ones who adapted to a way of life. And so we could also, if we say, you know what, most of the people in America are living in cities, and the migration to the cities is great. Most people are living where these cities are. Most people are living close by or in the petals of the city. And so the whatever denomination is adaptable to that will be the large denomination 100 years from now. We say that. That's not our goal, to be the largest denomination, but is it? Our goal is to reach Christ, and you know, to preach Christ and to go out and to and so when you have people who are hungering and thirsting and needing help and open to dialogue, well, if they're in the cities, that's where they are. That's where we ought to be. And most times, though, if you look at the church across America, you know, they're happy to be outside and to go in and maybe hand out tracts and go back out, or go in and sing and go back out, or you know, we'll have this sort of a targeted drop in. What did that one preacher call it? Hurricane evangelism. You know, you blow in, you blow up, and you blow out. That's not going to do long-term missions. And so somebody living in the city, somebody who's raising their children in the city, who is working in the city, working alongside of it, a lot of good contacts when I drove bus. I was driving the mass transit bus, and so you have people who don't have vehicles. I met a number of people that way. It's a very good ministry, very good opportunity to be.
It's basically being strategic. Go where the needs are, where the people are.
Right.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I think that's really good.
Well, one of the things that I think everybody ought to understand, and I sort of alluded to it before, we need to be faithful no matter where we're at. And so if you say, I can't live in a city. No, there's no way I can live in a city. Well, would you consider maybe a suburb where you have your own grass and your own yard, and you still have, you know, but you're within striking distance of the city. You maybe want to work in the city. I am amazed at how many times we are judgmental. You know, you said prejudice, right? And it shows up by staring, by looking. I would go out to the country and take some children from the city. We'd go out to a church service. And they come back, and this, over and over again, I heard this. Mennonites have eye problems. Mennonites have eye problems. So what do you mean? They just stare at you. They just stare at you. And, you know, where's the friendliness? You know, the friendliest church I was ever at was the Mormon church. Everybody in that auditorium came to say hi to me. I mean, it's just, they, okay, so here's somebody we can get, right? Here's somebody we can win. And they made a point to make us feel welcome. Oh, please come again. Is there any questions we can answer for you? When you go to a new Mennonite church, even those of us who are Mennonites, people just stare at you. The unfriendliest Mennonite church I was ever at. I went in, I took a whole van load of children, we went to the service, and not one person said hi to us. Now, they all talked about us, you could tell that, right? They were looking at us and whispering, and not one person came over to say hi. The point is, most Mennonite churches are not friendly churches. Most Mennonite churches are not welcoming churches. And so a stranger walks in. I mean, we have that here. We have to constantly work at our church, who's in the city to win mm-hmm. people and encourage people to say, get out of that clique. You know, service is over, stand up, and immediately you have people just talking to whoever's around mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's the people, because we all sit in our own places, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there's new people, there's visitors who are completely ignored. Mm-hmm. And so it's something you have to work at. My parents taught us we ought to be winsome. We ought to be a winsome person. Mm-hmm. Now, Jesus was winsome, mm-hmm. but he asked a lot of questions. Do we have enough time to ask questions? Or do mm-hmm. we already assume? Well, assuming is prejudice, right? Mm-hmm. I assume I know what you mean. I assume by mm-hmm. what you're saying. And so it's fascinating when you start asking questions and begin to learn hard. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, another thing about prejudice is we come in and assume that we have a better way of life.
Yeah.
And we can yeah. teach you something. We have a young man living with us. It's very easy for us to look at the ghetto and the lifestyle he grew up with and say, there's really nothing for me to learn from him. He said, we would never let our children run around in church, like growing up. Mm. Our culture, our community would keep the children quiet. Mm. What do? After church, we just assume that our children are going to be safe because mm-hmm. they're among us, right? Mm-hmm. And so they go out to the fellowship hall and they run and tear and jump and mm-hmm. carry on. And I realize some families do better than others, right? But there are things we can learn from their culture. There mm-hmm. are things from this culture that we're living in that can mm-hmm. actually help us. And mm-hmm. and we can humble ourselves and say, you know what? While there's lots and lots about the culture I don't agree mm-hmm. with or appreciate it, wait, am I so proud to think I got it all together? And so we got to really yeah. work at that.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Another thing, when I remember from, mentioned that I grew up in Lancaster City. I mean, I ministered in Lancaster City. My parents went in. We didn't live there. But one day I was a little six-year-old maybe, and I was teasing one of the neighbor boys and making some sort of comment. And my mom called me into the church and said, people that you make fun of, you will never win for Jesus. Hmm. And people you laugh about will never win for Jesus. Wow. So when, what are our jokes? Who do we tell jokes about? Mm-hmm. We got to think about that because there's a lot, I mean, it's so yeah. much fun to have jokes. It's so much fun to be the center of the party and tell yeah. jokes. But if we're putting people down or we're putting genders down or races down or, you know, we already now have a superior attitude towards those mm-hmm. and we're not going to win them for Jesus.
Yeah.
If we're going to tell jokes about them. And so mm-hmm. that's another area we have to think about.
It's about being about intentionally thinking and taking the time to analyze your worldview. Where is this coming mm-hmm. from? It's very easy, and I'm sure every human on the planet struggles with this, but this superiority mindset. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm better than fill in the blank. Whoever, this person, that person, this other religion, this whatever. But you know, we're all created in the image of God. Wow, well thank you, Clayton, for being on this episode, for tackling something big like prejudice and living in a city and wow, all the complex dynamics you have to deal with.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah, yeah, and hopefully this will inspire some people to take a hard look at what they think of others.
For more information about Anabaptist Perspectives, to read our blog, to donate, and to see videos of the conversations you hear on this podcast, visit anabaptistperspectives.org. We'd love to hear from our audience, so leave your feedback in the comments for this podcast or send us a message through our Facebook page. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Anabaptist Perspectives.
Thank you for listening to Anabaptist Perspectives. Your listening and sharing this with friends helps more people find our episodes. A special thanks to all of you who support Anabaptist Perspectives financially. We are here because of you. If you haven't had the chance to give yet this year, would you consider making a year-end donation? You can donate on our website or by check. Thank you so much for listening and supporting Anabaptist Perspectives. Thank you for joining us for this episode, and thanks to our donors and partners for making this possible. We publish essays on our website at anabaptistperspectives.org. We also release these essays in narrated form as their own podcast called Essays for King Jesus.